Hey, all you evil rogues. Stop looting the graves and listen up. It's time for another episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a show dedicated to the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, tips, interviews, and reviews for the community, by the community. And now, here's your host.
Hello, this is Jay, a.k.a. Navinka Naroda.
Hey, and this is Trey, a.k.a. Ash Gonzalo.
And you're listening to the Neverwinter Nights podcast. Woohoo! So this week, we're back. It's been 2 weeks. I know it's a longer schedule. Some of you guys are not liking it, but it's been 2 weeks, so we're back. We're got a
look. Actually, I kind of like it.
Yeah, me too. I've actually gotten to play games for the last week.
That's what I was fixing to say. I actually got to play some of the Neverwinter Nights 2 original campaign. Got a little farther in that.
Farther than
I normally would have gotten.
Where are you now?
Where am I? Let's see. I'm trying to remember. I'm going through the old well. That's where I'm at.
Oh, so you're past the Neverwinter Nights or the Neverwinter Watch and all that kind of stuff. Are you past Neverwinter?
Well, I just left Neverwinter and went to the old well.
Oh, okay, you're ahead of me then.
On a quest.
I think that will
take me back to Neverwinter.
Ah, okay.
Because I have to bring an emissary back, escort him back to Neverwinter.
Well, I started over and
I gotta kill a bunch of orcs to get him.
Ooh. I started over and am just now got back to Neverwinter and had the shards looked at, so I'm starting all over the Neverwinter Watch part. But I finished a lot of those side quests that I hadn't done before, so I'm in a much better spot and my character's developing much better this time, so it was a good thing to do that.
Are you still playing as a cleric?
No, I'm playing.
Oh, you said you switched to a fighter.
Yes, I'm playing as a fighter this time. Remember, I dual classed my last time when I went through a fighter barbarian, and it just wasn't working out as well as I would liked it to have. So,
barbarian dumb.
Yeah, he hadn't gained me much of the stuff I was wanting to get. So I'm back to just a straight fighter right now, and it's working out.
Did you ever use that barbarian rage stuff?
I tried, and I think part of it's just inexperience, not knowing how to utilize that correctly. So here I was trying to do two new classes as a dual class. I figured I better learn the base classes first and then dual class them.
I'm really liking the warlock. It's pretty cool. There's some new spells that never existed in Neverwinter Nights 1, and it's pretty slick. I like it. Having fun with the warlock. Can be nice, but every once in a while you can be a little mean.
Or you
have to be a little mean. Otherwise, you won't be able to continue as a warlock.
Now I see why you'd like that one. Hey, we got some news to cover, and before we get to the news, we'll cover a listener question. We got another audio from Lingo.
Hi, guys, and Michelle, if you're around. The question I have is the requirements for video cards for NWN 2. The new machine I just purchased has a 256 card in it, and I was just curious if it's going to be adequate. If I need to replace it, I would rather do it sooner than later. Thanks a lot, guys. And by the way, as a follow-up, my son is 10 years old. Level up.
Well, I will say that I have a 6800 GT GeoForce with 256 meg, and I've been able to turn just about everything up in Neverwinter Nights 2 and had no problems.
That's another one of the SLI cards, is that right?
Well, it can be SLI.
Okay.
If I bought another one and paired them up.
Oh, I have the NVIDIA GeForce 7900 GT with 512, and I've got most things turned up, but there are sometimes when I get into the game, stuff gets real pixelated and the colors don't work out really well, so there's a few things I've got turned down. But 256 really? Or above,
I don't think you
can
go wrong.
I don't think you can either.
I was cruising out here on the on Newegg, and I'm thinking you know if you've got either a 7000 series or a 6000 series. I think they've even come out with 8000 series now.
An
8600 GT out here for $130. You probably couldn't go wrong with that 256 meg.
You may just want to go ahead and install the game and play it and try some settings. If you find yourself having to dial it down to lower than what you want, then you know, invest the $150 and get your new card. But that's my opinion, and that's what we know. Our cards work pretty well, so I'll open it up to the community if you guys have some input or maybe some insight into what Lingo should do as far as a good card for Nevermore Nights 2 for video. Please let us know.
Let us know how it goes, Lingo.
Yeah, let us know. Well, we finally got our interview done. Not to be confused with interviews we do with everybody else, but actually Kayla on the Warcry sent us a text interview, and that's our second one we've done. So you guys can check out the interview all about us on the Warcry side. So that was a lot of fun, and we appreciate getting that exposure.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Other big news items.
Oh, wait, before you go on to that, I will say, though, when Kayla listens, it's going to be her turn pretty soon. Well, we want to get her on to do an interview as well.
You and Michelle both are African.
Yeah, that's what I noticed.
You're quickly going to work yourself into a corner there, Kayla. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's happening.
Do what?
I said, yeah, it's happening. The biggest news in the last 2 weeks for Neverwinter Nights, well, I guess it's kind of Neverwinter Nights community interest. It's the BioWare World Design Contest. You heard about that?
Yes, actually,
that was all over the network.
Yeah, I saw it on the vault one night when I was checking it out.
So the basic gist of it is that the BioWare is getting ready to build their first MMORPG, and they're looking for level designers. So they're holding a contest. They want people to enter the contest by creating a level in Neverwinter Nights 1. That's using the Aurora tool set and submitting it to them. Now, there's some other rules and regulations about it, but evidently, if you win the contest, you can get a job with BioWare. So that's kind of cool.
So I'm a little bit confused. This is going to be an MMORPG for Neverwinter Nights 1?
I don't think it's a MMORPG for Neverwinter Nights 1. You know, just like the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is kind of an online pay-for-play kind of game, and it was built with a Aurora tool set.
Oh, I see.
It was built with a modifier.
I see. So this is.
So I think they're just wanting to see, you've got this tool set, show us what you can do, and out of that we'll pick who we think's the best.
So there's only one entry per person will be accepted. Multiple entries by the same person will result in all submissions from that person being automatically disqualified. Wow.
Yeah, there's some stiff rules out there. I'd recommend everybody that wants to get involved with it to go read them first, and we'll put the link in the show notes for that.
Create an adventure not shorter than 20 minutes, at the most 40 minutes. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, they want them to just create a showcase to just show off their scripting and their design skills. In other news... If you guys haven't been checking out Rob McGinnis's Obsidian Neverwinter Nights 2 blog, you gotta check that out. He doesn't post on it, but about once every 2 weeks, which is great for us because we're gonna pull information from there every time we can.
He goes into some worlds are down.
Yeah, it talks about NWN2 worlds being down, which is Strauss, which is also the NWN2 news site that used to be up. If you guys remember that being down, he talks a little bit about some things that are going to be coming in patch 107.
Wow.
Yeah, we haven't even got 106 yet. He's already talking about 107. And then there's some screen renders on here for a sewer tile set that Hellfire is putting together. The guys at Robinson Workshop, my gosh, they are incredible looking. But I think the most interesting one, which is something I'm grabbing as fast as I can, is the buff and rebuff. If you check out that post, Lost Creation has put together this UI enhancement so that when you buff all your characters, you can record it like a macro and then
buff on, buff off.
Buff them again.
Buff on, buff off.
Later after you rest. So that is an awesome one. I think I'm not going to live without. Because I know how many times in Neverwinter Nights 1, and even when we play online in this area or something like that, we have to wait. Oh, crap, where did I put that one on the toolbar?
Do you have to play that one in the buff? No, that's going to be cool because I know.
No comment. No comment.
That's going to be. No, not playing in the buff is going to be cool.
Yeah, it's called the wand of preparation.
Yeah, having that macro that you're talking about for you as a cleric when we play.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be totally awesome because, you know, we're always going along saying, okay, Jay, buff us up before we go in.
That's right.
And so we have to all sit down there tree while he prepares us.
It's called the Rod of Preparation.
Is he done yet? No, I don't think he's done yet. Is he done yet? Okay. Oh, here they come. Okay, cool. You know, everything starts lighting up.
So it quickly applies as most feats and spells to any member of your party, including animal companions and familiars. It works with the official Neverwinter Nights 2 campaign. Should work with community modules that support and have tag-based script enabled.
So now this is Neverwinter Nights 2, though, right?
Yep. Yes, for Neverwinter Nights 2. It works with spells and feats. Works with the domain spells. And you can add new spells and feats to those that are already stored on the rod. So it's... Yeah, I'm going to have to get this and try this out, because this is going to be pretty cool. Right now, it's got a 5 votes and a score of 10.
Talking about that from the NWN1 days, where we used to... have our own little private server, and everybody in our clan would get on and play. We need to do that for Neverwinter Nights 2 here pretty quick. You know what?
Well, there just hasn't been enough persistent world-type modules like we could download and put our own server up with. Now, we can host other modules.
But well, I'll be looking forward to when we find one that we can do that with again.
Yeah, they're starting to come out. They're not far away, but they just haven't got there yet.
I miss all of us getting together and playing like that. Don't you?
I do. I miss just having time to play. I've really enjoyed getting just back on that console and, well, not console, but the keyboard and the PC and just kicking some butt. It's been fun. The other things that he talks about in his blog is just
a peek
more
behind the curtain.
Peek behind the curtain on the patch 107 and what it's going to do for the DM client. So if you're a DM or you're interested in DMing, you might want to check out that post and see what's coming your way next, because it's a he goes into some detail on some stuff.
Sounds like patch 107 is going to be one for the DM client.
Yeah, I think so.
From what it sounds like. So all you dungeon masters out there, you should be looking forward to 107.
So what you got going on? Made any headway, or we got a date for our DM-led event? Even though the contest is over, we're scheduling out when we're going to do that thing.
Well, you know, originally we had that scheduled for the weekend before this weekend. We originally had it scheduled for May 19th, I think. And my grandmother passed away shortly right before that. So
we're all sorry to hear that.
Yeah, unfortunately. And her and I were pretty close, and we had family in that weekend, and so I asked Kaveen if we could postpone it. He said sure. And so just this past last week, though, I PM'd Kaveen and asked him if June 9th would be okay, and he said if that's okay with everybody else. So this past Thursday, I emailed everybody that was on the list.
Cool.
And said that we're going to go ahead and set it up in Neverwinter Nights Connection for June 9th, 11 a.m. Central Time. And so as of Thursday last week, I went ahead and shot emails out to everyone that was going to be in the event. That's Halloween Foxy, Kaveen, who's going to be DMing it, Eric O'Shane, Kevin Sheehan. I'm probably forgetting a couple here. Lisa and yourself. And me, so.
Right. And Sol, and
Solnar. And I think he set it up. Yes, and Solnar. Yes, forgot about that. Sorry. And, like I said, we've set that up for 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. So if everybody who's going to play will get on Neverwinter Nights Connection and sign up.
And send us your IDs.
It will.
So that we can, because this is going to be a private event.
Right.
We'll need your ID so that we can send you the invite.
This is Bob, a.k.a. FFBJ. My module is called Second God War. You can access it by typing FFBJ into the search field on the vault. This is a persistent world set in a role-playing world which I DM'd for over a dozen years. The time period is roughly equivalent to the High Middle Ages, with some similarities in attitudes and lifestyles. I attempt to create a more proactive world where the player is just another character on the stage of life, albeit an important one. The main feature that distinguishes this world is the fact that faction relationships persist over server resets. Your religion, politics, and alignment all affect how others react to you, as does what you do. This is a challenging world where allegiances shift depending on what you do.
Today we had the chance to sit down with Andarian, author of The Sanctum of the Archmage 1, The Site, a module for Neverwinter Nights 1. The Sanctum of the Archmage is a Hall of Fame module with a score of 9.5 and 18 pages worth of comments. So, Andarian, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Actually, the current score on the module is 9.78.
Oh, cool. Last time I looked at it, was 9.5, so awesome.
Yeah, it's been going up steadily for the last few months, actually.
Very cool. So let's get things started off. Let's have you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got hooked up with Neverwinter Nights.
Okay. Well, my name is Tony, and I'm a computational scientist and physicist by profession. And in terms of my experience with Neverwinter Nights, I had years ago when I was younger and in college for the first time, I had played Dungeons and Dragons. This is back in the early 1980s, and I had played a lot of D&D back then as a dungeon master and ran a number of games and campaigns for some people, and became very interested in the game. And although I don't play pen and paper anymore, when all of the computer-related games for D&D came out, I was always following them along and playing a lot of them. And I was very excited when I saw that Neverwinter Nights came out about 5 years ago, because it had a lot of real good features for implementing D&D in a computer game environment. And I started playing it back then, and I only got interested in module building probably about a year and a half ago. And that was as a result of having played a number of custom modules for Neverwinter Nights 1 from the vault. After I had played a bunch of those, I started thinking, this is really interesting. I'd like to give this a try and see what it would be like to try and tell a story through this medium, through the medium of actually doing a sort of interactive computer game. And that was what got me interested in starting to look into building for Neverwinter Nights.
All right, so you've had a long history with the D&D rule sets.
Yeah, I started with the version 1 books back in 1980.
Wow.
Pretty much right when they came out, I bought them off the shelf.
Well, here I am. The first one I've purchased is the 3.5 rule set, so I guess I'm a newbie in consideration. Sanctum of the Archmage modules they take place in Carlissa, which is a city or town state in the world of Glorn. That's an area or a world that you've kind of created, is that not? Or can you tell us a little bit about that to clarify that?
No, that's exactly right. The world of Glorn, actually, there isn't a name sort of for the entire world, but I just named the world after one of the prominent cities of the world, which is the city of Glorn, which is a major trading port in more or less the center of the continent at the mouth of the Callaghan River, which runs down from the Nurian Mountains. If you look at the map on my website, you can see all of that. And this was a world that I created actually for the D&D games that I ran in 1980. Or in the 1980s, the early 1980s. And basically it was the environment for the group that I was playing with, who were called the Heroes of Glorn, to adventure in. And I created the various continents and some of the history of the world to serve as the backdrop for the games I was running.
Well, that map I looked at is pretty extensive. Did it take a long time to develop that?
Actually, the map wasn't that hard to do. I mean, map drawing is kind of a fun thing. You just sort of go with your inspiration, and it took me maybe a day to put together years ago, and then another few hours to edit recently when I wanted to add some new features to it.
Yeah, I've tried doing that myself, and I guess I'm just challenged in that area then. Can you tell us a little bit about, not without giving too much away, about Sanctum of the Archmage 1, the site, and kind of what your goals were for that?
Oh, sure. The goals that I had for it were something that came out of, as I said, playing other Neverwinter Nights modules. And I sat down and said, I want to try telling a story. And I actually had a ready-made story, which was partly developed from the D&D games that I had played years ago. There was a period in my life in the late 80s and early 90s when I tried to write novels based on some of the ideas I had come up with for those campaigns. And I actually have a very extensive set of notes and some chapters written for that. But it was something that I had to put on the shelf after a while just because the rest of my life was taking up too much of my time. But it was always something I wanted to go back to. So when I thought, gee, you know, I'd like to try my hand at making modules, I had a story on the shelf that all I had to do was pull off and start working with. And that story was well developed except for certain aspects of the backstory to the novels or to the planned novels, which I said, you know what, let me think about the backstory and sort of do a module based on that. And that was where the idea for the site came about. Basically, the story is about in the world of Glorne, the kingdom of Carlissa, an evil warlord called the Black Magus has somehow managed to summon an army of demons into the world, and he's used them to conquer the kingdom of Carlissa, butchering the royal family and spreading terror throughout the country and threatening all of his neighbors. And the story behind the module is about how you, as the player, make allies in trying to resist and oppose the actions of the warlord, both in keeping his grip on the kingdom and in spreading to the other parts of the world. The module tells the origin story of the protagonist of the planned novels, who's called Miracle Worker. And he's starts out as a young forest dweller, seemingly ordinary person, except that he has an unusual gift of foresight, a strange ability to project the flow of events, so to speak, or sort of the flow of history. It's not exactly seeing the future, and I sort of talk about that in the module, but it's a talent for essentially projecting the possible consequences of certain of his actions, which gives him a unique ability that he can use. It turns out he's able to use if he can develop his ability to control it to oppose the warlord. And then, of course, in the course of the novels, he makes an alliance, becomes friends with the deposed princess of Carlissa, and becomes her partner, basically, in fighting to regain control of the kingdom from the warlord.
Wow, that sounds really cool. And I noticed that either an interview you did with Steve Savicki or on your website, I don't remember which, that you said it stated that it took you almost a year to create Sanctum of the Archmage 1. Did you accomplish this alone, or did you have other input from other people in the community to help you with that?
No, I'm a one-man show. Everything in Sanctum, with the exception of some of the custom content that I downloaded from the vault that's out there for the purpose of people to do that, was all all developed by me. And that's one of the reasons it took a while. Another was the fact that my real life kept intruding. As I said, there's a certain aspect of the custom content that I was able to get, and some very good pieces, some wonderful musical pieces, and a couple of script systems that I was able to embellish on and make use of for the modules. There's a lot of custom scripting in Sanctum in particular, because that's my background is in computers, and so one of the things that I got into when I started building was thinking, oh gosh, I can script everything I want, and I got very ambitious in terms of trying to develop scripting systems for the kinds of unique things I wanted to have happen.
I totally understand. I'm a programmer myself by trade, so that's the one of the aspects of it that interests me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I noticed that there's, on the vault, there's actually two versions of the module that you can download, one with a female Robin and one with a male Robin. Can you elaborate on your choices there and why you decided to do that?
Yeah, there's actually an interesting history behind that, and part of it comes from the fact that, as I said, my intentions with the module were to tell part of the story of the novels that I had tried to write. And a central aspect of the plot of the novels is the love story between the miracle worker and the princess. which in the novels, the princess is female, the miracle worker is male. And in the novels, I don't have to worry about what the gender of the player is, because there is no player.
Right.
The reader is just reading a story. But when you get to playing a module, suddenly that becomes a factor. And when I first started developing the module, that was something that I hadn't considered. I just wrote it basically as the love story that was available if you were playing a male character with Robin as a female character. But the romance between those two characters is such a central part of that story and of that plot that I felt it was unfair to restrict only male players to having it available. And some of my female players seemed to agree with me about that. So I finally decided that, one way I could get around this would be to develop an alternate version of the module, basically where Robin is made into a male instead of a female character, basically changing all of the gender of all the pronouns and a few lines that just don't work if they're said by a male character rather than a female character. And then I put that out there, and I've gotten very, very positive feedback about that, so I've been very gratified.
Yeah, I noticed there's been a lot of discussion regarding the romance that's in there, and I just think you kind of covered some of that. Is there anything else you'd add to that on why that's such a big point of discussion?
Yeah, the major reason is that it's actually because it's a major part of the story, and it's a major part of what I was trying to accomplish with the story. I'm kind of an incurable romantic, so building a romance plot into the story was a very important goal of mine in building the modules. I spent a lot of time thinking about how to structure the romance, how to make it effective, how to make it interesting. And actually, in the site, most of that work is actually set up for the development of the romances that will then become much more a central feature of the story as in the sequel modules. But one of the things that I wanted to do was to set up the development of the potential romances. And there are actually three of them. There's the potential romance with Robin, whether you're playing a male or a female version. And then there are two additional companions, one of whom appears in the site and one of whom appears very near the beginning of the sequel, who are alternative romance options. So that was a very important part and a very big part of what I was trying to accomplish with the modules.
Very interesting. With the Sanctum of the Archmage 2, the Miracle Worker, your second module, you're talking about the next one in the series, will that pretty much just pick up where the site left off, or is there going to be a time difference in there?
No, it's literally going to pick up only a few seconds after the first module ends. Basically, you walk through an exit, a tunnel exit at the end of the site, and the Alliance, which is the first act of the sequel, The Miracle Worker, will pick up when you get to the other side of that tunnel. So it picks up right after the end of the first module.
Very cool. Is either one of these, I guess, the Sanctum of the Archmage 1 or 2, are they set for a particular character, or would any class work equally as well in the story?
I tried to design the module so that any class would work well. And I've gotten feedback from people who've played it with just about every kind of class successfully. The only thing that it's designed for, and I do talk a little bit about this on the website, is that it's designed for someone who is playing a little bit of a thinker, someone with a little bit of a strong mind, maybe a little bit higher scores in intelligence, wisdom, and charisma, for example,
right,
than would be typical for an ordinary lowbrow character. So if you can play it with a fighter, but it would be worthwhile to play it with a fighter who's moderately intelligent, for example, if one were to do that.
Okay. I also noticed that in an interview with Steve Savicki about Sanctum of the Archmage 1, you mentioned that you were going to do the Miracle Worker in Neverwinter Nights 1. And I noticed that since then you have updated that, saying that you finally got a machine that could run Neverwinter Nights 2. Will Sanctum of the Archmage 2, the Miracle Worker, be a Neverwinter Nights 2 module?
It's funny you should ask that particular question right now. Up until a few days ago, if you had asked me that, I would have said, yeah, that's a decision that I've made. I'm going to do it at Neverwinter Nights 2. I'm actually getting into seriously trying to build it now, and I'm starting to find that there are some reasons that are making me reconsider that. The short answer is I haven't actually made a final decision about whether or not to reconsider doing the first act of the sequel in Neverwinter Nights 1. I might, in fact, do that. If I do, I would probably then port the first act to Neverwinter Nights 2 before doing the subsequent acts. The sequel is going to be done as three acts three short modules or acts. The first act of which is called The Alliance.
Wow. That really makes me interested in the next question. The answer to the next question was like, what was your impression of the Neverwinter Nights tool sets when compared to Neverwinter Nights 1?
I have kind of a love-hate relationship with the Neverwinter Nights 2. There are some things that they did wonderfully and that I really, really like and really love. And there are other things that they did that I don't like and that annoy me. And some of them are things that can be worked around and can be fixed. But the major reason that I was I had started developing some concerns about that is that I'm getting the sense that Neverwinter Nights 2 isn't quite developing and maturing as quickly as I would have hoped that it would have. In particular, there are some issues with custom content coming out more slowly than some of us might have expected. And I think that I actually posted a long post on my blog about this just yesterday. I think that I've doing some reading about this, I'm sort of learning that there's some of the reasons for it. That apparently Obsidian used a proprietary 3D graphics format called Granny 3D for development in Neverwinter Nights 2, which had certain benefits in terms of performance and ease of development, but also some drawbacks in particular in terms of the fact that it doesn't have plugins for conversion to other 3D graphics formats. So the people out there who wanted to develop custom content for Neverwinter Nights 2 basically are faced with the choice of buying a copy of Granny, which I think is something like $12,000. Or...
I think I read a post just recently on Rob McGinnis's blog from Obsidian that they were either a Granny plug-in that they were trying to talk about releasing.
Yes. Exactly. They're actually, from what I can gather, there's a Granny plug-in for conversion between the Granny format and some of the other formats, modeling formats, that's in beta right now. And when that comes out, that's going to be a real liberating force.
I think it was supposed to work with Maya and 3DS Max, I think. I'm not sure about that, but I think definitely 3DS Max was one of them. It was supposed to convert to the Granny format.
Yeah, and that's the real important one from what I can see.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because that's been one of my concerns as well, is that, I opened up a tool set. We had, at the same time we were talking about doing the podcast, there was a group of us all talking about building a custom world, a persistent world, and with the tool set.
Mm-hmm.
And our experience with it right off the bat, well, actually me and another person on our guild was in the toolset beta.
Mm-hmm.
So we were playing with it all early on. I was like, wow, there's a lot of good stuff here, but where's all the critters? Where's all the other placeable content? And we were kind of bummed about that. We couldn't get – and that's why I started looking at the Community Expansion Pack team going, hey, dude, guys, going to do something for Neverwinter Nights 2? Maybe fill in the gap where we're missing stuff? But
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what Neverwinter Nights 2 needs. If something like a SEP for NWN2 would drastically open up the options for development. Some of the other things, just quickly about Neverwinter Nights 2, that they made certain changes with regard to how cutscenes and portraits were handled that I thought were problematic. There were some improvements in the sense that Neverwinter Nights 2 makes conversation-based cutscenes really, really powerful and easy to do. And there are certain development issues with regard to developing conversations that make conversations much easier in Neverwinter Nights 2. In Neverwinter Nights 1, you could escape out of conversations,
mm-hmm.
which meant that you had to do a lot of careful scripting to handle cases where someone might escape out of a conversation, and how do you get him back into the conversation? What do you do if he goes back into the conversation and gets a reward twice or three times or four times? All of that's gone with Neverwinter Nights 2 because you can't get out of the conversation. And the portraits, in Neverwinter Nights 2 now, they basically take a picture of the, of your character's model and put it up as the portrait, which doesn't look very good. And I've always been a very strong, proponent of the idea that you want to be able to have an idealized image of yourself, something like a portrait, a 2D painting or something mm-hmm. like that, as the portrait, to just sort of give a sense of this is who, not just what my character looks like in the game, but who he is in terms of expressing sort of an ideal image of him.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I always looked at Neverwinter Nights 1. I always tried to pick the portrait that kind of portrayed the image of what I wanted my end character to be, what I was mm-hmm. striving for that character to become.
Exactly.
Well, also, on reading your website, and you mentioned this earlier, and I was going to ask you some more about this, that you are developing a set of novels, and these modules are basically just the backstory of this. What's the status on the novels? Have they been published? And, you know, can we see preview chapters, or you know, how is that going? I know that if we left that dangling, our listeners were going to go, "Wait, where can I get this?"
Yeah, the situation with that is that this is exactly the stories that I had tried to write about a decade and a half ago, and then put on the shelf for many years. As I said, I've got extensive notes, and I have some chapters written. Now that I've come back to it years later, I probably would want to rewrite the chapters, certain aspects of the chapters that I have written before doing anything more with them. But my plan right now actually is that I want to get back into writing again. This is a sort of a goal in my life that I had put off for a number of years, and I've sort of made a decision to sort of phase this back into my life now. And I'm starting with the modules and with the telling of the backstory to the saga through the modules. Basically, my plan is that once I've finished writing the modules, then I'm going to sit down and I'm going to rewrite the chapters and start writing the novels and hopefully try to get them published. So that's sort of the sequence that I have in mind. I don't have any sample chapters that I would want to put out yet, partly because almost any of them would spoil aspects of the saga that I'm doing in the modules.
Well, you still got quite a bit of information on your website that details the campaign and information about the world and Carlissa. And so there's a lot of good backstory information already there that doesn't give spoilers in it. So.
Right. I worked very carefully to try to select what I could say that wouldn't spoil too much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know that writing is something I've been interested in as well. I know, especially when we started talking about doing our own Persistent World, and when we got into, it was like two or three of us got into some really deep discussions about politics and factions and how the world was just going to work. Mm. I found out that I was dealing more with a writing type of scenario, mm-hmm. saying, you know, how's our story going to progress? How's our world going to progress? And how does this group change? How does your decisions in this world going to affect how this group reacts to you or that group reacts to you? So I found that to be a lot of fun because you got to play with different scenarios and you being, into numbers and everything else probably enjoyed that part of it too, because it's almost like a mathematical approach to it. Like if this one happens here, then these guys don't like you anymore. So it kind of gives that facet to it. So I can understand the interest there, and I'll be interested to see the book novels and the rest of the modules coming out. I did want to ask you a couple more questions, and one of them was, how do you feel that your experience being a DM with pencil and paper D&D helped you prepare for creating the modules and writing the novels?
An interesting thing about that, I think that they didn't help that much with writing the novels, except insofar as that they were exercises in creativity and in story development, you know, coming up with a story for a D&D scenario is a sort of a creative act, and it's a lot like the idea of, you know, coming up with a story for the novels. But the thing that was really helpful was my experience as a DM. The thing that really my experience as a DM really helped with was for developing the modules, because there's a whole different set of thinking that you have to do from writing a novel. You have to take into account that you've got a player who's going to immerse himself into the story, and he has to control aspects of the story. If you write a module or run a D&D game in which basically the players are just along for the ride, they can't affect things, you know, you just tell them what happens next and they say yes sir, it's not fun.
Right.
And you want to avoid that. And that's what you have to do in writing a novel, because you have to say, this is how the story progresses, and in a very linear, very precise fashion. There's a fine line to be walked in either writing modules or in running a D&D game, where you have to make the story and the progression of events tight enough to be compelling, but yet at the same time have provisions set aside for the players to be able to affect the outcome of things. And you have to be prepared for the fact that your players will inevitably come up with things. If you're playing a real D&D game with people there, they'll come up with things that you absolutely did not expect. And you just got to think on your feet and go, whoa, okay, this changes everything. And having the ability to sort of project those possibilities was something that I got out of DMing for many years.
Do you, like I mentioned, you don't play pen and paper D&D very much anymore or at all?
Not at all. I haven't played since really the early 90s, actually. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that I've had other things in my life. And part of it's the fact that I I don't know very many people who play anymore.
So your Sanctums of the Archmage modules are single-player storytelling campaigns. Is that the best, a good description?
Yes.
Okay.
Very
so
much.
They're basically designed for a single-player, not necessarily a DM'd or a persistent world.
Well, in fact, they wouldn't be compatible with a DM'd or persistent world, and in particular, they wouldn't be compatible with multiple players at all. They're written for one player. They wouldn't make any sense. And actually, the way I scripted certain things, I did not make use of the kind of functions that you would have to in order to support multiplayer. So they're strictly single player.
So what about how long of a playtime do you think the site is? If you can, did you add an average playtime on that? I think I was trying to remember on the Vault if you listed that as part of the stats on your module.
On the Vault, I said about 10 hours. And when I played through it recently, I actually recorded a full playthrough on video just to have an example of a playthrough of it to refer to, and that took me about 7 or 8
wow.
hours. But of course that was I'm experienced with
exactly.
the game, so I knew what to do. So I would say about 10 hours. But in particular, the site is written in such a way that there's a lot of reading and interacting to do, and some players don't like to do that. And I tried to warn people on the website and with the readme that you really can't do that. You have to sit down, you have to read the descriptions, you have to read the conversations. When you encounter a new object, you have to examine it and read the descriptions, or you won't know what to do, because it's very much written that way. So that's why it really takes about 10 hours, because there's a lot of that kind of interaction built into it, a lot of writing in it.
Was there anything else you'd like to tell us about your modules or your novels that we haven't touched on?
Just a little bit about the fact that I like to sort of my motivation in module building. I talked a little bit about the fact that I was sort of became fascinated by the idea of looking into how one could tell stories in this kind of an environment where basically you've got a computer that you can program to do certain things and make that that storytelling experience interactive in a way that traditional media isn't. And that's actually a very big focus for me in terms of what I'm trying to accomplish with building modules. And I have a sort of a feeling that module building has the potential to become actually a new medium of storytelling, kind of in some ways comparable to the historical emergence of the novel or of the movie, because it's a wholly new type of experience for storytelling that has new parameters to it, new things that a builder has, that an author has to take into account, design principles that haven't really been explored yet, that are distinctive for an interactive kind of experience as opposed to the kind of passive experience you get from watching a movie or reading a novel. And that's something that is actually very important to me in terms of trying to explore with module building.
Well, I agree. I think the thing that makes me think about is, and I'm not trying to belittle the venue because I think this is how dynamic it is, especially for being a PC and like I said, a story-told game-driven game. It reminds me of when I was a kid when we get the flip books where you would read
yes.
a couple paragraphs and then it would say, what's your decision? And then based on what your decision was, it would send you to a different page and it would change the path of the story. I mean, and that's why I think it Neverwinter Nights gives us that environment to create these dynamically changing stories based on what the user's or the game player's decisions are, which is not what you get in a linear, thought-out, just novel.
Exactly.
So I think it's one of the things it's very attractive about that. And matter of fact, I think what you've done with Neverwinter Nights 1 has struck a good chord with the community, because there's 19 pages worth of comments on there on your module, and page after page of them are just accolades to the highest, you know, and 10 scores over and over and over again. And very few questions or very few of them are, oh, I can't figure this part out. They're just always saying how well that the module is laid out. And there's a couple of them, I think, where even they were so surprised that they pulled down a community-created module that didn't have any bugs in it.
I was very gratified by all of that.
Yeah, so I think your 9.7 score quickly, I'm sure, will become a 10 eventually, is well-deserved.
Well, thank you very much.
I look forward to the next module coming out, and I appreciate you taking the time to sit with us on the show.
Jay, thanks a lot. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening, and if you have questions, comments, or show ideas, send them to show@neverwinternightspodcast.com.
Also, if you're on our site, you can add your shout-out to our Frapper map by clicking the Frapper logo. And if you're a member of a mod team and would like to have your module featured on a mod spotlight, check out the Submit a Mod Spotlight page on our website.
That's it. Be sure to check next episode, where we will be talking to Robert Thrift from the DLA team, creator of the Corbin Crown of Corbin premium module. Until next time,
in game
and level up.
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, or their partners and employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, which is solely responsible for its content.